faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
All right, welcome. Glad you're with us. Let's continue day three, looking at the farewell address of President Andrew Jackson. This is a very important topic if we want to understand how we got where we are today and where we're going. In fact, I just found an article today as I was researching more on Andrew Jackson. I just found an article by Martin Armstrong. Some of you will know who Martin Armstrong is. Some of you won't. But he actually has an article entitled Understanding Jackson's Bank War. I find it pretty interesting. I want to read parts of it before we get back to actually hearing from President Jackson himself in his March 4th, 1837 farewell address. But Martin Armstrong writes, understanding Jackson's bank war is critical to our future. Isn't that what we've been saying the last few days? If you want to understand the past, understand the future, you got to understand the past. How we got here, you have to understand the past. Where we're going, you have to understand the past. He's saying the same thing. Understanding Jackson's bank war is critical to our future. He was absolutely correct insofar following the Jeffersonian view that a national debt would not be a blessing, as Hamilton proclaimed, but the servitude of the people that would ultimately consume all liberty. In this vein of thinking, Andrew Jackson was correct. And in his annual message to Congress in December of 1834, President Andrew Jackson reported that the United States would be debt-free as of January 1st, 1835. This marked the first and only time that the United States or any other major nation in history had ever been free from debt. Jackson declared, quote, "Let us commemorate the payment of the public debt as an event that gives us increased power as a nation and reflects luster on our federal union," end quote. Jackson had adhered to the prevailing view of Thomas Jefferson in his battle against Hamilton to create a national debt. Jefferson's view was that incurring a national debt and passing it on to future generations condemned those generations to involuntary servitude. There are people who have made up quotes attributed to Jefferson, so we won't go into that. But there are some quotes about Jefferson that are absolutely clear and are documented. Jefferson's view on debt was the critical point that Jackson followed. Debts passed on to children that they neither voted for nor approved of are a blatant example of taxation without representation in the Jeffersonian view of life. When Jackson first ran for president in 1824, he denounced the debt as a national curse. He vowed, quote, to, quote, pay the national debt, prevent a moneyed aristocracy from growing up and around our administration that must bend its views and ultimately destroy the liberty of our country, end quote. Thomas Jefferson considered excessive debt immoral and advocated paying off debts within a generation, 20 to 40 years at the time. This was taxation without representation. Children must pay debts they did not create nor benefit from. Andrew Jackson was following in Jefferson's footsteps as he sought to pay off the national debt during his presidency, which was 1829 to 1837. Now, Martin Armstrong goes on to write, Jackson created countless enemies and became one of the most polarizing presidents in American history. His war on the banks took a twofold approach. First, he needed to eliminate the national debt that he saw as beholden to bankers. Paying down the debt required cutting government spending, and you can imagine the chaos and bad feelings that would set off today. That would set off today, right? In the course of this objective, Jackson generally opposed bills that allocated taxpayer money for, quote, internal improvements, end quote. What we call pork barrel spending today. In the 1863 popular story, The Children of the Public, Edward Everett Hale used the term pork barrel as a homily metaphor for any form of public spending to the citizenry. However, after the American Civil War, the term's usage turned derogatory. Jackson, now this is very interesting. Very interesting. Listen to this. Jackson's feud with Henry Clay was famous. Both ran for president in 1824 with John Quincy Adams. Both ran for president in 1824 along with John Quincy Adams. So three men running for the White House. Clay lost with the least amount of votes. Jackson had really won. But Clay was the Speaker of the House. And he steered the election to Adams anyway. What? In 1824, we got a stolen election? Andrew Jackson lost the presidency through a stolen election? Well, isn't this interesting? People have made a lot of, marked a lot of the similarities between Donald Trump and Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson went against the powerful East Coast money elite. Jackson was looked down on by many of those people. It is said by many that Donald Trump never was a part of that club, the moneyed elite on the East Coast. Many of them have always looked down on him. He didn't like them. They didn't like him. President Trump had a war continually in his presidency. And while running for office and in his presidency, warring and after warring with the press. Andrew Jackson had the same thing, warring with the press. Many lies were brought against Andrew Jackson and his family, as well as Donald Trump. Donald Trump was an America first. He understood what the foreign powers were doing to us. Andrew Jackson, much the same. And we could go on and make all kinds of comparisons, and there are many, between President Trump and Andrew Jackson. You remember Andrew Jackson, of course, didn't want the central bank, right? The bank wars. You guys remember when Donald Trump, President Trump, called out the chairman of the Federal Reserve and was openly criticizing? I don't ever remember a president in modern times criticizing the chairman of the Fed the way Donald Trump did. Andrew Jackson hated the idea of a central bank. That's really what's been a lot of our discussion and so much of what Andrew Jackson was talking about in his farewell address in 1837. The similarities are interesting. But here we find out that in 1824, Andrew Jackson actually won the presidency but loses it in the House of Representatives. Isn't that what happened to Donald Trump? Didn't he actually win the presidency, but he actually lost it in the House of Representatives because of the cowardice of Mikey Pence? Very interesting. Jackson and Clay were both lawyers and each hated the other passionately. When Jackson won the elect for president in 1829, he would personally punish Kentucky, vetoing any pork spending since that was the home state of his hated rival, Henry Clay. Still, Jackson did much to cut government spending and make it possible to pay off the national debt by January 1st, 1835. I already told you what a frugal individual Jackson was, going to Hermitage a week ago tomorrow. He had the pillars of his hermitage in the front of the house, the back of the house, not made from, I don't know if they called it cement then or not, but it wasn't made from, they were not, the pillars were not made from cement. They were made from wood. And they were even given a grainy texture, if you rub your hands on them, that would make it feel as though they had been made of some kind of mortar or cement. As soon as you enter the hermitage and look to your left at the baseboards of the entryway, if you looked down toward the floor and the baseboards, you would think that was marble. But the tour guide quickly pointed out it was faux painting, made to look like marble. His frugality was very impressive and something to be admired. But yet at the same time, the elegance and classiness of the hermitage is fully intact. Yet he knew how to cut corners, be frugal. In 1828, a new tariff. This is very interesting and very important because it's, I think it's going to show us really what the Civil War was about. Wars are fought always for many reasons. Wars are always fought for many reasons. Not everyone fights a war for the same reason. And we're often told that the Civil War was about slavery, it was about slavery, it was about slavery. Well, for some, maybe it was. Wars are often fought for many reasons. Not everyone fights for the same reason. Some would say that it was about slavery. Some would say it was about state rights. Some would say it was an economic war. Well, let's look at that, because this comes up in this article by Martin Armstrong. In 1828, a new tariff law took effect that raised taxes on foreign imports to unprecedented levels. The law's supporters were mostly Northerners who believed higher taxes on imports would protect Northern industrial goods from European competition. There was clearly a divergence between the North and the South with respect to international trade. The South saw this as a law which disproportionately harmed their economy, because that region relied more on foreign imports than the North. Furthermore, the Jackson Hyde tariffs led to retaliation by foreign trading partners, who in turn imposed high tariffs on their own against American exports. Since the South exported more things, such as cotton and tobacco, compared to more industrialized North, the Jackson tariffs were also disproportionately harmed the Southern economy more so than the North. South Carolina's response to perceived erroneous federal taxation led to one of the first major sectional conflicts in U.S. history and helped sow the seeds of civil war. Right? Interesting. In 1832, outraged Jackson proposed to mobilize a federal army and lead it himself into South Carolina to collect the revenue. Ultimately, cooler heads prevailed when South Carolina agreed to abide by a modified tariff law. This tariff collection was vital in paying down the national debt. An increase in government revenue was also required to pay down the national debt. To this end, Jackson enforced the tariff laws that many southern states viewed as excessive and even confiscatory. In other words, confiscate. Then he goes on from there. But I think that's a very interesting article by Martin Armstrong for several reasons. One, again, highlighting that the Civil War that came after Andrew Jackson, well, there are many reasons, again, that happened. We are often only told of one. But also that Jackson was following in the footsteps of Thomas Jefferson. And that our nation at one time, on January 1st, 1835, became debt-free. Oh, that we were debt-free today, right, folks, as a nation? How different would life be for us? How different life would be? What does the Bible say? Should we follow the Bible when it comes to that issue of being in debt? We haven't followed sound economics, biblical economics, and of course, this led, of course, to the expansion of our money supply, the growth of government, and we are where we are. Now, Martin Armstrong and others say that, yes, he was following Thomas Jefferson's view on national debt. Others say he was also motivated in part by political enemies that were in the big central banking. Either way, I agree with Andrew Jackson. Ahem. All right, welcome back. Glad you are with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com. All right, let's get back to the March 4th, 1837 farewell address by Andrew Jackson, which I think, again, is so important to understanding where we are today, where we came from, how we got here, where we're going. I'll pick it up one paragraph that I read last broadcast. One paragraph I read yesterday. I'll pick it up to get us into the flow. He says, "It is well known that there have always been those amongst us who wish to enlarge the powers of the general government." Of course, today we refer to it as the federal government. He called it the general government. "And experience would seem to indicate that there is a tendency on the part of this government to overstep the boundaries marked out for it by the Constitution." Wouldn't he be shocked if he came back today? It's, you know, wouldn't so many of our presidents be shocked if they came back and toured Washington, D.C.? They wouldn't even recognize it. They're like, what are all these buildings? What are all these buildings? Who works in these buildings? This is the EPA over here. The what? The Environmental Protection Agency. What do they do? Wait. Where is that in the Constitution? What's this over here? Oh, that's the IRS. The what? The Internal Revenue Service. You mean you have a permanent federal income tax? You mean, like, not just during the time of war, but it's always? And the people tolerate this? What's this? Oh, this is HUD, Housing and Urban Development. You got to be kidding me. You got the government now involved in setting policy in the states for housing and urban? What is urban development, pray tell? Oh, we provide housing for poor. You've got to be kidding me. We have opened up the treasury and are now giving out money to people? Are they able-bodied? Can they work? We subsidize their housing? Are you kidding me? How are you guys paying for all this? We tax people. How are you doing this? It's a progressive scale. You're kidding. You're kidding me. You tax people, not during a time of war for a limited reason and purpose and then stop it, but this is ongoing and you do it on a progressive scale. You're telling me that you have a socialist system where you tax those who actually create the jobs? The people that are entrepreneurs? You tax them in order to give government housing to those that don't want to work? How is it you haven't had a revolution in the country? The American people tolerate this? How is that? This building over here might have something to do with it. Well, pray tell, what is that building? That's the Department of Education. Where is that in the U.S. Constitution? You now have a federal government dictating to the states what they should teach their children? I thought that was the job of the parents. I thought the local community and often the church was used as the schoolroom. And the parents chose to pay for their education of their children and the hiring of a teacher should they not want to do it themselves on a daily basis. I thought this was all done by the choice of the parents and the parents paid for it. But you're telling me now that the federal government sets out curriculum and what shall be taught? Pray tell, what are they teaching? Marxism. Now, some of these guys would say, who is Karl Marx? Who's that guy? And so you'd have to take a little time. Karl Marx, let's see. He was a lazy loaf whose children committed suicide or starved to death because he was so lazy and he wanted to profit from the benefits of others, including his buddy Engels, who's they took money from his dad, who actually was a capitalist, an entrepreneur, a free market guy, and they took his money and used it for their ideas, which included nationalizing things. You mean like is in D.C., like this, all these buildings I don't recognize, nationalizing one thing after another, like housing and education. Yeah, So that guy, Karl Marx, You're teaching him in your schools. Well, what did Marx? What is Marx known for other than the Communist Manifesto and the 10 planks that you've been explaining to me? Well, he said things like our object in life is to dethrone God and destroy capitalism. What? You're teaching in the schools of America a guy that openly said one of his goals in life was to dethrone God, and you think the Republic can survive? What else are you teaching through this federal Department of Education? We push policies of LGBTQI+. You teach the alphabet? You're federally funding the teaching of the alphabet? No. We're teaching the LGBTQ+. What is that? Oh, it's the lesbian, bisexual, transgender? What, huh? You're teaching, and of course, this would have to go offline. You couldn't describe this on the radio. But after you come back online, what they were told, they were like, you got to be kidding me. You're teaching that we the children have to value, appreciate, and celebrate homosexuality? What the Bible says is an abomination? And I don't understand how you have the technology, but you're telling me you have technology to do surgeries to change little boys into little girls and vice versa. And this is being promoted. And if you are a parent that opposes this, this FBI building over here sends out people to harass these parents? Yeah, actually, they've kicked down their doors, handcuffed them. Oh, I'm sure the American people started a revolution over that, right? 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 No, they didn't. Can you imagine if many of our presidents came back and toured Washington and started Washington, D.C., and started to ask what this building, and that building house. And they found out about all of these government alphabet agencies that are in no way constitutional, and that the American people actually have tolerated it for decades and decades. They would be dumbfounded. How is it you haven't had a civil war? How is it this country has not split apart? Pray tell, why have some of the states not stood up and separated themselves from this tyranny? And many of them would come to understand that Andrew Jackson, among others, warned that a powerful, moneyed group will have not only permeated the nation's capital, but the capitals of all 50 states. A money group, and that politicians will have been bought and paid for by this powerful money group of banking cartel banksters. I think they would be absolutely stunned. I would think some of them turning and seeing the white dotted hills of Arlington National Cemetery, some who would know exactly what it was, others would have to have it explained to them, but they would understand the idea of a national cemetery. I think they would have to say, so these fields are at almost capacity for men that fought the very philosophies and ideas, fought against the very philosophies and ideas that now have become accepted as virtuous within the very halls of Congress and that of the state legislators. For what did these men die? Can you imagine spending one day with Andrew Jackson and explaining to him all that was going on? One day with Thomas Jefferson Benjamin Franklin. Patrick Henry. And so many others. They would not believe it. I think their greatest outrage would be not just at the government, because they expected government would grow beyond its constitutional bounds. Many of them feared the judiciary. I think they knew that there was a big danger for a central government. This is why we had to have the 10 Bill of Rights to handcuff the central governments. I think they would be shocked at the legislative and judicial gymnastics that would have been accomplished in order to take those handcuffs, the 10 Bill of Rights, off the central government and put them on the states, and that the people actually tolerated it. I think they would be disgusted by the American people. I think they would have great compassion for a segment of the American population. I think they would have great compassion for a segment of the American population who every day get up and work and endeavor to provide for their families, and yet not be discouraged or give up under the weight of the burden of regulation and taxation, much less the burden of ridicule and mocking of those very same people because their life's toil is based on their conservative, Christian, patriotic worldview, and yet they are the enemy. They are the source of all suffering and oppression. The ones that get up every day, go to work, obey the laws, even obeying these unconstitutional, tyrannical laws, they get up every day being people that desire to be peaceful, working it out if they can through the process of our systems that have now been hijacked so that their own will is not honored at the voting booth. They would be, I believe, appalled, but have great compassion for so many of us who have become the enemy of our own government because we hold to a worldview that is so closely aligned with theirs. So I think their ire would be split between anger and compassion toward many of the American people. I think then they would say, what, pray tell, is going on in the churches of America? You have got to be kidding me. You guys just told me about this Department of Education that's teaching this LGBT, what's that again? LGBTQI+. Okay, this perversion. You're telling me that's coming out of your Department of Education that the people, the taxpayers, the Christians pay for, and you're telling me the pulpits of America have nothing to say about this? No, they don't. They don't, no. Why? Because the seminaries in America were captured. They were captured by that Marxist ideology we were telling you about. It was captured through the idea that this is what Jesus would do. That Jesus was a socialist. That Jesus was for redistribution. They have exchanged the biblical gospel for a social gospel, and they have transitioned from the spiritual to the material. And people still go to these churches and give them their money? Yes. It's a three-legged stool of big government, big business, and a spirituality that has brought down America. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com. Worldviewradio.com. So what would so many of our founders and presidents say if I could give them a tour of Washington, D.C. today? Well, we've kind of been talking about that, haven't we? Really shocking. I go back to what they would say about America's churches and what has happened to America's so-called pastors. That the pulpits of America's churches have been shackled through the IRS, which would still leave them dizzied, thinking that that was actually a building filled with the bureaucrats doing what they do and the American people tolerate it. But that same agency, yeah, shackled the freedom of the churches by declaring if they actually lift up a shout and a voice in favor of a candidate who wants to proclaim righteousness through the land through actually applying Christian principles and the general principles of Christianity, and should said church actually work on behalf of such a representative, they would lose their status. And thus, the churches were shackled. The churches had abandoned a spiritual gospel that indeed was relevant for everyday life, but had focused instead on merely the material social justice. I dare say, if I invited the group of founding fathers and early presidents into my home and I said, gentlemen, please have a seat. My wife is preparing some refreshments, but I would like for you to turn your attention to this screen hanging over the fireplace. This is what we call a television. We can talk about the technology and how this is done later, but suffice to say, this has been going on in America for many, many decades, and it is through this box that the American people have, well, been brainwashed. Not only through the schools and the Department of Education we talked about earlier, not only now through their so-called churches, but through this medium of television. The media. Not just newsprint, but now the news coming over the screen where you can view the newscaster telling you what you should think about today's events. Then there's also programming, like you used to go see plays. Maybe at Ford's Theater. You'd see plays. Well, now these so-called plays are acted out and projected through technology onto the screens that pick it up into the living rooms. And we don't have to rely only on certain terrestrial signals, but now we're able through fiber and cables to have thousands and thousands of channels at our disposal to watch any kind of programming that you would desire, good or evil. May I show you some of those popular programs in America today? Can you imagine the faces that would fill with blood in blush and embarrassment? You mean this is what the American people consume? They actually have this on their the so-called commercials in between the shows? These commercials? The sexualization of children? Two men kissing each other? For what? To buy some kind of drug that will loot off the effects of their lifestyle? This is open to the public? Well, no wonder your country is so debased. You're telling me that this is what the culture has accepted as normal. And you're telling me that the ones that are the source of all suffering and oppression are the Christians. What would these men say about the state of our nation today? I think many of them would say, I don't fully understand the technology, that's for sure. This is weird. Blows my mind. I can't grasp it. I see it, but I don't understand it. The technology is overwhelming. The advancements, the softness of your lives, the conveniences, the appliances. You are a blessed people. So I don't understand the technology, but I do understand the philosophies. And I think many of them would say, those are the same philosophies. Maybe your times have changed with your technology and your advancement, but the philosophies are no different than our day. And we understand those philosophies, and we warned you about those philosophies. Some of these institutions are the same that we warned you about. Some of the money-powered people are the same people we warned you about. They just have simply been able to use the technology of your day to further their cause, their conditioning, and their brainwashing of a population to think they were free when they were really enslaved. So Andrew Jackson, March 4th, 1837, warned that this government could overstep its bounds that were marked out for it by the Constitution. Its legitimate authority is abundantly sufficient for all purposes for which it was created. And these founding fathers and early presidents walking through Washington would say, that's not in the Constitution. What this so-called agency is doing is not in the U.S. Constitution. They have overstepped their bounds. For all the things that the Constitution called for were enough for the central government to accomplish the purpose for which it was created. And now the central government is involved in things for which they were never created to be involved in. Their powers being expressly enumerated. There can be no justification for claiming anything beyond them. Every attempt to exercise power beyond these limits should be promptly and firmly opposed. For one evil example will lead to another, to other measures still more mischievous. And if the principle of constructive powers or supposed advantages or temporary circumstances shall ever be permitted to justify the assumption of a power not given by the Constitution, the general government will before long absorb all the powers of the legislation, and you will have in effect but one consolidated government. Don't tell me we have to do this. For this cause, we must go outside the bounds of the Constitution and create this agency or do this function. No, you cannot, because if it is accepted, what will thus be allowed will be beyond the control of the American people, and you will end up with one gigantic, tyrannical, consolidated government. From the existence, says Andrew Jackson, From the extent of our country, it is diversified interests, different pursuits, and different habits. It is too obvious for arguments that a single consolidated government would be wholly inadequate to watch over and protect its interests. Then every friend of our free institutions should always be prepared to maintain unimpaired and in full vigor the rights of the sovereignty of the states, to confine the action of the general government strictly to the sphere of its appropriate duties, end quote. You better guard your state rights. You better guard the sovereignty of your individual republics. Because these individual states and republics have their own interests, their own history, their own culture, their own ways, and in many ways their own policy, that they are legitimately full to exercise. But if you don't confine this general government and you give up the rights of your sovereign states, don't be shocked if you find this consolidated government is telling you what you can and cannot do that was fully within your right to do as a sovereign and individual state and republic. Is that today? Yeah, that's how all those agencies that we were just showing the founding fathers and the early presidents exist today, to tell us whether it's the EPA, the IRS, the Department of Education, Housing and Urban Development. I'm reading now, the Biden regime wants to pass strict laws to tell landlords what they can and cannot do. Where is that in the U.S. Constitution? Where is that in the United States Constitution, the audacity, the arrogance, the tyranny to think that Washington, D.C., full largely of a bunch of bureaucrats that would not have the common sense to run a hot dog stand, wants to tell a landowner of private property what he can and cannot do within a private contract with a tenant that the tenant agrees to and signs. It ceases to be private property. The things that have gone on in this country would baffle the founding fathers and our early presidents that this nation has not had multiple civil wars and a revolution. And they would understand that it's largely because the people are no longer a virtuous people, an educated people, an enlightened people, and a patriotic people, but a debased, darken-hearted, ignorant, foolish, lazy, apathetic, jealous people. And that they were receiving the consequences of all of those things I just listed. Apathy, laziness, slothfulness, passivity, a lack of education. Not talking degrees, I'm talking self-education, aware, vigilant, selfless. For if you don't care about yourself, that's your choice. But do you not care about your fellow American or future generations, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren? How could you be so selfish? How could you be so unappreciative for what we labored to build? This free society and nation overflowing with opportunity and the prosperity beyond imagination for all who would seek to take full advantage of what we had sacrificed and built. You ungrateful, selfish, degenerate people. Now, of course, as I said, their anger and wrath would go toward a percentage of Americans. Another percentage, it would say, I don't know how these people get up every day. I don't know how they persevere. And they take it. For they're outnumbered. They're outnumbered. They're outarmed. They've allowed a federal government to become so big and powerful. Their states have not guarded against this federal army. These poor people. Phone line is now open. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. Before we go to the phone lines, President Andrew Jackson, March 4th, 1837, farewell address says, quote, "There is perhaps no one of the powers conferred on the federal government so liable to abuse as the taxing power. The most productive and convenient sources of revenue were necessarily given to it that it might be able to perform the important duties imposed upon it. And the taxes which it lays upon commerce being concealed from the real prayer in the price, being concealed from the real payer in the price of the article. They do not so readily attract the attention of the people as smaller sums demanded from them directly by the tax gatherer. But the tax imposed on goods enhances by so much the price of the commodity to the consumer. And as many of these duties are imposed on articles of necessity, which are daily used by the great body of the people, the money raised by these imports is drawn from their pockets. Congress has no right under the Constitution to take money from the people unless it is required to execute some one of the specified or specific powers entrusted to the government." Can I read that again? Congress has no right under the Constitution to take money from people unless it is required to execute some one of the specific powers entrusted to the government. And if they raise more than is necessary for such purposes, it is an abuse of power of taxation and unjust and oppressive. Well, how much money is raised today that is not the enumerated responsibility of the government? And therefore, they would come back and say, this is an unjust and oppressive central government. And the American people have tolerated it. Let's go to Mark, line two. Mark, thank you for calling in. Go ahead, Mark.
I just want to say bravo, bravo, bravo. I'd get out my car and salute you if I could. I tell you what, if the founding fathers ever came down here, they'll look at you and say, I'm out of here real quick. Because they know this country is gone down the toilet, period, flat out. And there's no way we're going to turn this around because we got a bunch of pacifist people, I even know, that don't even see it. So I agree with you 100% what you said, and I don't – I really don't something about you – getting mad over the radio on that. Just bravo, bravo. I commend you, and I'm clapping.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark. Mark from Ohio checking in. Let's go to line four, Justin. Justin from Salina, Kansas. Justin, thank you for calling in, Justin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Brandon. I was going to say, my history teacher in high school, he taught us about the election in 1912, where the major argument or debate was how to deal with these banking institutions and the J.P. Morgans. And shortly thereafter, when Wilson took or won, that's when we've seen all these things kind of come to pass. But I've been out of high school for 30 years. It's just, you wonder what can be done.
Indeed. Of course, 1913 is when we got the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, because we didn't listen to the farewell address of Andrew Jackson. And look where we're at now. Not only do we have the Federal Reserve, which is very fascinating. What's very fascinating is that we have so much of the industrialized world with their own central banks, which now seem to be consolidated through their headquarters in Basel, Switzerland, the Bank for International Settlements, which is working on the idea of world government. And now these bankers own the politicians. Even Carol Quigley, who wrote his book Tragedy and Hope in 1966, said that the bankers would control the politicians with rewards in the business community and the business world. How is it these people go off to Washington? They have very little net worth, and they leave multi-millionaires. How is that possible? Thank you, Justin. Zoe, line one. Zoe from Champaign, Illinois. Zoe, go ahead, Zoe.
Hi, Brandon. You know, they'd be appalled, our founders, to find out that our legislation that the Congress passes, not only is our legislation largely written by lobbyists, can you believe, but we're ruled by regulations, not laws from the senior executive service of our federal government. And, of course, our founders would say, the senior what?
Yeah.
And they brought in that senior under Carter. When they brought in that senior executive service, that was just the death knell. And a lot of this stuff, not only have people not been taught in our education system, some of it isn't their fault, but their parents should have been watching. Because they plain don't know. People have no clue. And I feel so blessed that I was taught a few things and that I learned a lot from you and some other people. And thank you so much, Brannon.
Thank you, Zoe. Appreciate the call. Thank you, Zoe. Let's go to, let's see here, Barry, line 3. Barry, thanks for calling in, Barry.
Yeah, hi, Brannon. I just want to point out something from Genesis chapter 47, starting in verse 13. It's information about Joseph and the Mediterranean famine collapse at that time. And a point I would like to make is that, and that's, it starts out as saying the money collapsed, just point blank it says that. And then they gave up their money for food, and then they gave up their livestock and their land. And the other point I would like to make is that it was not the poor tenant farmers that gave up their land. It was the middle class that willingly gave up their land and became slaves, and the other people had to follow suit after that. That's my major point there.
Wow. Thank you. Let's go back to the speech by Andrew Jackson. He talked about taxing and the abuse of taxation. He said, it may indeed happen that the revenue will sometimes exceed the amount anticipated when the taxes were laid. When, however, this is ascertained, it is easy to reduce them, and in such a case, it is unquestionably the duty of the government to reduce them, for no circumstance can justify it in assuming a power not given to it by the Constitution, nor in taking away the money of the people when it is not needed for the legitimate wants of the government. We'll stop right there. We'll pick up tomorrow with the farewell address of Andrew Jackson. We're learning a lot, aren't we? We didn't listen to men that understood what is the purpose and function of the general government, the federal government. And we see the very consequences they warned about now coming to pass. I hope you'll share this broadcast. We'll post it today at WVWTV.com. Stay tuned for Crosstalk coming up next. Thanks for listening. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, VCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on VCY America.
Clear.